in terms of what they're useful for, or creating them, or what kind of angle are you?
I would say use cases, or you know, really any angle at all. It's
right. So I'll offer two use cases from UVA, or one use case and one template for a use case from UVA. The template is, we actually end up using, this is Fedora 3 I'm thinking of now, and it just, there's every sign it will continue in Fedora 4. We actually use Sparkle endpoints that are maintained along with the repository extensively for administrative work. Now that may have to do with the mix of skills in play, and it may not be as interesting elsewhere. But a lot of questions can be answered very quickly with a simple, or sometimes a not so simple, Sparkle query. And our repository technologists, by and large, have become pretty comfortable with looking to say, oh, we need to know what stuff from that period of time in these collections went through thus and such a kind of processing for, you know, some auditing reason or whatever it is, and developing a Sparkle query that'll answer that kind of question. The other and the more specific use case is, we use Sparkle to reconstitute intellectual artifacts that have been broken down into many, many technical artifacts in the repository. And a classic example would be like the pages in a book, or some images that came in a folder in a manuscript collection and that we've digitized, and that we want to keep that association in a useful way. Or more sophisticated examples, like strongly hierarchical resources, a newspaper, for example, where you, serials generally, where you have, you know, series and volume and all this kind of arrangement, that gets broken down into the repository. The links are there, of course. The RDF is there connecting those resources. But sometimes you want to provide these things to the patron with some sense of the overall arrangement. And the Sparkle endpoint becomes very useful then, with some sophisticated queries that reconstitute some kind of connected a data structure that you can use for a presentation that you can put on a screen in some intelligible way. So
I have a question about that. I hear often that Sparkle can be slow. So it sounds like one of the use cases is driving the user interface. And I'm wondering.
Yeah. Oh, it sure can be. It absolutely can. it's kind of like saying, you know, databases can be slow. Well, yeah,
that's a really good point. Yes.
Yeah. It really depends on I'm working right now actually in a very different context, doing some consulting for the Smithsonian. And it's interesting to see the kinds of variances you see in what seem to be fairly straightforward setups in terms of data. Data is not changing a whole lot. The network itself and the computers on it is not changing a whole lot. But just with simple software adjustments, the amount of change you can see in performance in triple stores. And that's for two kinds of reasons. One is the youth of this technology. Keep in mind that when you pull out a tool like PostgreSQL or MySQL or one of these SQL databases, you're looking at technology that's 40 years old. The basic underlying ideas behind it. And so we understand that kind of stuff a lot better than we understand schemaless data stores and graph data stores. And then secondly, because of that, and I just mentioned it in the last sentence, the fact that these triple stores are schemaless. There is no way to understand data dependencies. There is no way, at least no inherent way, and there's no way to account for them in terms of caching, in terms of the sorts of things that programmers like myself and Hector do to create performance. So we're in a different kind of world when we deal with graphs, when we deal with assertion-based stores like RDF stores. So those performance questions are just confusing and harder to answer in some ways. But there are techniques that are available. And I'm going to, you know, look to Hector. I'll shut up in a second and I'll let him get a word in edgewise. But I'm going to look to Hector to talk about some of the stuff that goes on, for example, in Hydra to create performance. I know that using secondary indexes like Solr is part of that, using smart caching systems is part of that. There's all kinds of stuff there. I don't know how far into that we need to go, you know, into the weeds on the technology, but I would want you guys to understand that there are ways to solve those problems, or at least to ameliorate them.
Yeah, and I would like to add to what Adam said. I also have heard, and I don't have a lot of experience with Sparkle endpoint and triple stores, but I have heard people say, when you get to billions of triples, you will have problems. And that is true. And as Adam said, when you get to billions on anything, you're going to need to tweak. That is the state that we are, even on a relational database, right? You might reach a billion quicker with triple stores than with relational databases, but it's something that needs to be handled. On on the Hydra stack, and in particular in Sophia, I can speak for Sophia, the way we do things is that we don't query data from Fedora for the most part. We query data from Solr. And Solr is incredibly fast, and it can do some really fancy searching and ranking. But keep in mind, when you search Solr, you are not really using your RDF link data. You're searching against an index in Solr. So if you didn't copy to Solr certain relationship that your link data will allow you to do, too bad. That query is not going to pick up that relationship. If you are interested in RDF because inferencing, for example, you are not going to get that out of Solr. So Solr is really good for some things, but you lose some of the power of RDF when you rely only on Solr. Yeah. So I think a long-term goal might be that actually we might be able to use both Solr for something and a Sparkle endpoint for other things and come up with ways to do something that makes sense. Not something easy to do, not something that I don't think anyone is working today in the community, but I think it's something that people are talking about, that we should rely a little more on Sparkle in addition to what we do with Solr.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on one point there, Hector, and it's one very specific point, and that is that no one in the community is thinking about that particular frontier as far as combining different kinds of indexes. I do think people are thinking about that. I wouldn't say there's any kind of established practices. There's a lot of experimentation yet to do, but the very fact that, you know, you think of this stuff as kind of stock and trade, you know, kind of just techniques that you have to use sometimes. We know a little bit about them. We don't always get what we want perfectly out of them, but we know how to do the basics. It speaks to the fact that folks are at least beginning to explore these possibilities. I want to draw one general pattern out of what Hector was describing, which is this idea of a secondary index. And a simple way to think about it is an index on your indexes. So you have this material in repository territory, and hopefully it's very durable and very safe and very persistent. And maybe it's distributed, and there's all kinds of fixity and auditing services that you have wrapped around it. And then you have maybe a triple store that's got an intense amount of information extracted. But it is an extract from the repository. And then, as Hector described, maybe you have even further layers of extraction and clarification, and that they provide even better performance or more task-specific performance. That's a very general pattern in systems architecture, and it's a really useful one, and I think it's something to be encouraged. It can occasionally be a little more difficult to maintain those kinds of systems. You have to think about it from the beginning. How do you make sure that changes propagate correctly? And you know, but these are you know, solvable problems, and I think you can have, for a cost, and that cost is the maintenance, you can have the best of both worlds. You can have the sophistication of a graph store and the speed of a keyword searching engine like Solr. I will mention one specific development that you guys at Yale may or may not have particular interest in, but I'll just mention it so you can get connected in if you want to. Stefano Kosu from the Art Institute of Chicago and a couple of other folks, I think folks from Chicago, I'm sorry, from California, from Stanford are interested in this as well. And I know Ben Armiter from Columbia is interested in this, and myself are interested in an Apache system called Stambul. It's actually used for content enhancement more than anything else. In other words, named entity recognition, that kind of stuff. Picking out names, people, places, and things in texts, in other kinds of documents, so that you can, at least in theory, do some description around that. But one particular need that the folks who created Stambul came up with on their way was the need to really handle a lot of RDF in simple ways quickly. And we see that a lot in the kinds of use cases that come up around doing description in RDF. You may not need to do ultra sophisticated 15-fingered, you know, triple jointed queries that sort of aggregate all kinds of sophisticated information from different resources. You may just need to find out all the facts about one thing quickly. That's a very common use case. It's what I sometimes think of as the linked data use case, because so often you dereference a single URL, you need all the properties associated with that entity right away, and that's it. That was the whole query. Stambul has components that do that and do it very well, backed by Solr. And it's an interesting case where, rather than have a secondary index, for example, Solr, that's filled with extracts from a triple store that itself is extracted from something else, these guys sort of turned it around and said, well, let's put Solr as an engine underneath the RDF storage itself. And in exchange for that, we're not going to be able to do really sophisticated queries. We can't support full Sparkle, but the queries that we can do, we're going to do blazingly fast. And if your particular use cases fit into their way of doing queries, it's a nice system. It's something to be looked at. So there's some There was some mention of that in the last couple of weeks. Stefano wrote a note or two to the Fedora list mentioning it and indicating that we were going to take a look at beginning to explore a relationship with that project. But I don't think we've done anything too much past that point. Oh, and Amherst University also, or Amherst College has also been looking at that, Aaron Coburn.
So I have a question that I don't know how to phrase that well. So one of the common things that I heard from each of you is that you're taking the original descriptive XML document and you're still storing that as a Fedora data stream. And then you're extracting from that parts of the mods as RDF. One of the things that I have trouble understanding is the point of having any descriptive metadata in RDF in terms of Hydra if all we're doing is taking and indexing in Solr. Now, we just heard some really excellent use cases that kind of point to future development. But I'm kind of curious if you can think of how far in the future is that development away?
Well, I'm particularly interested in that kind of development in the next 2 years, let's say. Going through that kind of development in the next 2 years from two angles. One is it's really boring, which is just metadata cleanup. We all have lots of strings in our metadata, and many of them, as we all know, are wrong. And there are things that are often wrong in two ways. They're wrong like they're not exactly what we think they are. They're maybe the name is not the control form of a name, or the subject heading wasn't quite put together correctly, or there was a commonly held subject heading and we made a local one. And then they're wrong in the sense that they're not really maybe strings at all. They're actually things. They're actually things that could have identifiers or for which identifiers already exist. And I've been working with our metadata folks here, our cataloging team and other folks in that end of things, to try to begin the process of moving from a label-based style of cataloging. I'm not talking about record-based versus assertion-based. I'm talking about what kind of cataloging rules are you using. We've just made the move to RDA recently. We haven't gone much beyond that. That was a great deal of effort in and of itself. But we'd like to move beyond that to, really using strong identifiers for description. So that, is an interesting pile of work there. That helps us support being able to offer more information in a cataloging display. It helps us support being able to offer more information in a patron-centric display. When you have an identifier, you can go and fetch more information about that thing from elsewhere, and that's something that we often find interesting. There's two other places that we're going to be looking at using this. One is kind of more pie in the sky, and you have to remember that my group actually is called Emerging Technologies, so I'm actually paid to think about pie in the sky on occasion. I'll talk about the more practical one briefly first, which is the ability to handle annotation. We are looking in the next year or so, we're beginning a process by which we're going to bring in patron-facing annotation abilities online. So the ability for patrons to start talking about our resources in ways that are visible to other patrons, that become durable, and part of our record, not necessarily specifically part of the catalog materials, but stored in other ways. In order to do that, we feel like we'd have to be absolutely bonkers not to start off with a linked data approach to that, using open annotation, using the kind of work that linked data for libraries has been very focused on. So that's what we're going to be using. And because of that, we need to be getting these kinds of processes underway where we're starting to get strong identifiers, get RDF in place for some of our metadata materials. The more pie in the sky direction is my tremendous dissatisfaction with the notion of relevancy. We have discussions here all the time. I'd be willing to bet donuts that you guys occasionally have similar discussions about how difficult it is to get relevancy to work really well across a really broad audience of faculty, undergrad students, patrons of all kinds who are looking at one search interface by and large and entering queries in whatever form they're being entered and getting back some kind of more or less ordered set of results. And it somehow seems that what the faculty who's an expert in one particular subject wants is not ever going to be quite the same as what the neophyte student that they're teaching will want. And that's not, to my mind, that's not something we can actually resolve with a single notion of relevancy. So it's a pet, you're hearing about some of my pet theories here that we need to move on to a notion of similarity, which is far more difficult to manage, but far more powerful. And a graph-based approach to cataloging is absolutely requisite to do that. You need to be able to talk about propinquity within a graph of the distance from one resource to another. To even get started on a project like that, we need to have description that is based around the graph and not based around a set of records. So I like to joke, and it's kind of a bitter joke, because I think there's too much truth in it, that to some extent, most of our cataloging systems are basically really fast, really flexible card catalogs. That's the metaphor there. The XML document is basically a card right out of the 19th century. And we have very fast ways of indexing and sorting and searching them, but it's fundamentally the same kind of process. And so I'm interested in moving beyond that, or at least trying to figure out what we might do to move beyond that. And that's where we'll be looking at going, maybe in the next, after this coming year, where we want to get public annotation solidly in place, we'll be looking at something like that.
So I'm wondering if anyone has opinions about blank nodes for RDF conversion.
I don't, but I have only heard bad things about blank nodes. But
I always really
don't have any experience with them. So.
So hearing or reading description, either as a machine or as a human, that is chock full of blank nodes, is kind of like talking to someone who can't remember anyone's name and tell stories that are full of phrases like, what's his face? And, you know, what's her nose? And that other fella, what's his name? It just gets very confusing and hard to figure out what's going on. That's fundamentally what blank notes are. They're unnamed resources. They're existential claims about the world. There is a thing like this. I don't know what it's called, though. They're very difficult to handle from the machine point of view, from the technological point of view, for the simple reason that they don't have names. It's very hard to handle things that don't have names. One of the reasons that I think you get such very, and Hector, you know, you're kind of, you know, voicing this, you hear such very strong reactions about blank nodes, particularly in the kind of the communities in which we all participate, is because so often what you find when you look at RDF metadata, descriptive metadata that has been, you know, riddled with blank nodes, is that basically you've got someone who's trying to do XML in RDF. They want a sense of hierarchy. They want a sense of context. They want a sense in which, if you want to understand why this relationship is in place, walk back up the tree and see where you are and see why this was constructed this way. And that's fundamentally not the way RDF works well. So it's problematic in that sense. They are certainly a part of RDF and a legitimate part of RDF, and there are plenty of legitimate reasons to use them. One way I like to sort of bring this point across is that blank nodes are perfectly good RDF. They are terrible linked data. They make it very difficult to do proper linked data, where the whole idea is that you don't assemble all the possible assertions that might be of interest in one place at one time. You are going to rely on the network. You're going to assume that the network exists and works. And when you need to dereference an identifier, you will do that and go find out more about that thing. Blank nodes make that very difficult because you can't dereference them. It means nothing to do that. So there are legitimate reasons to use them. They're actually pretty few and far between. And I think normally when you find yourself reaching for them, it's a healthy habit to sort of cross-check yourself and say, am I trying to do XML, a record style of work here? Or am I trying to actually break my knowledge down into very atomic assertions and actually record it in that way, which is what you'll do better at, you know, will fare better if you do that with RDF and eventually be able to do linked data with that. So.
Yeah, I think that's, it's particularly with descriptive metadata, looking at mods. The mods group at the Library of Congress tried to put together a mods RDF, a way of translating mods XML into mods RDF, and it's a very complex RDF. There's a lot of layers and hierarchy. You get a lot of things wrapped in mads RDF that then are, you know, the mods RDF thing that you're going for. So, and then there was some experiments that I ran trying to take mods RDF, take a record that we have in Mods XML, get it into Mods RDF, and then put that into Fedora to apply it to a digital object in Fedora 4. And the subjects and the genres, they became their own objects in the repository. Oh. And It was, yeah, I just, and I don't, I couldn't understand how you would work with that. How would you manage that? What would be the point of doing that? And I've heard some things where, well, if you've got a subject that's being used on several digital objects, maybe that's, there is a purpose for having that subject as its own object in the repository. But I have a real problem with those things being produced that way that are not actually, you know, it's not actually a digital object in your repository. It's something else that you're having to manage. And especially if it's something that's actually an authorized, you know, an authorized subject or genre that's already out there as linked data elsewhere, why are you trying to, you know, I wouldn't want to be replicating that in the repository anyway. So that's what happens to me when I start talking about Blankenodes. Is like,
I think those are great examples, Julie. I think you're 100% right with your reactions there. That's exactly, those are the sort of objections to make, absolutely. I will say this, that I think you sort of brought up in that case a nice, there's a principle behind that, which is that what's happening there is some mistakes are being made with ideas of identity. Folks are using Blankenodes to distinguish two, what they think are two things, which are two subject headings and two different records that aren't actually two different things. And one of the dangers, the secret nasty dangers of Blankenodes is that it's very difficult to project them down onto each other. It's very difficult to later come back and make the claim, well, these actually turned out to be the same thing. That has to do with the fact that a Blankenode has no existence outside of the document in which it appears. If you have two copies of the same exact RDF graph, one from Julie's institution, one from mine, and we use Blankenodes, it is very, very hard to prove that they actually refer to the same thing, especially in an automated way, which is always the way you end up wanting to do that. So those folks have distinguished things that they shouldn't have distinguished. And yeah.
The tricky thing is that it's perfectly valid RDF that they've created for Mods RDF. There's no problem having it be that way. It's just really difficult to use. It's pretty unusable.
No, absolutely true. Yeah. Well, that's a whole other story there, Julie, and I'm sure you are familiar with the difficulties in bringing ideas of validation into play with RDF. There's just not a lot of technology to support it right now, and a lot of theory even still needs to be created, I think.
Yeah.
Well, we are at the end of the hour. I just thought I would ask if there's any, you know, sort of a last call for comments. Otherwise, it looks like people are dropping off, so I don't want to hold anyone up.
This has been really interesting. I appreciate everyone's time.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, you know, Adam, Hector, and Julie for meeting with us today.
Thanks for the invite. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
I would say just come on over. The water is fine.
Well put.
Cool. Well, I guess...